You're listening to Swamp Things Talk, Florida Gators podcast with Orlando Sentinel's Edgar Thompson. Get the latest take on everything Florida with the guy who knows the Gators as well as anyone. And now, on with the show.
And welcome to another edition of Swamp Things Talk, a podcast about the Florida Gators. My name is Brant Parsons, and with me are Orlando Sentinel, Florida Gator beat writer Edgar Thompson, back from a vacation just in time for a bye week. But that's fine. We're going to go ahead and look back on the Gator season so far. Edgar, take it as a halfway point, even though it's not technically a halfway point. They've played six games, five to go, plus, you know, maybe a couple more after that. But we come into this week, the Gators, maybe one more after that. We're going to talk about that also. If there are any games to be played after Thanksgiving weekend. Gators right now on the season, 3-3, 3-2 in the conference. They've lost two straight games by the thinnest of margins. Edgar, you weren't at the game Saturday, but of course you followed it. You watched some of it, and I'm sure you took time to find out what happened in it. So we can't take this, we can't talk about it as a your eye view of being at the game. You're aware of it, and certainly you've seen the story before, but another tough loss for the Gators at home, a tight loss against Texas A&M, 19-17. Certainly another one of those games that just takes some, maybe a little bit more of the wind out of the sails, because it looked like a game the Gators should have been able to have the W on, and they end up with another close loss at home.
Well, it's what we were talking about last time. And by the way, for listeners, I was at my sister's wedding. This was not like it was a vacation, I guess, but it was an obligation that had to be done. I've missed two games. One was for a funeral. This was a much more festive occasion, luckily. But yes, the Gators have been playing with fire for a while. I mean, Jim McElwain, going into LSU, was 9-1 in one possession games. Well, that's turned now. He's now lost 2 1 possession games in a row. And you play that style, you're going to get burned. It might be the only style they can play, given, you know, the offensive deficiencies. I mean, this season, in fairness, the injuries are piling up. The suspensions were a gut punch. But yeah, it was like I said to you before we started this, it was kind of like deja vu. I didn't feel like I really missed anything I hadn't seen. And I watched the end of the game, and first play when Franks threw that interception, it's just amazing how they just can't seem to like rise to the occasion on offense almost at any time. I mean, yes, the big Hail Mary pass, but other than that, it's like they just can't seem to get it going and do anything when they really have their backs against the wall on offense right now.
And I think that's a point you made, because they've won games with a more anemic offense. The running game continues to find its form. If we're talking about a positive, they were able to run the ball on Texas A&M. But as you said, when it comes down to those important times, when you need to make a play, when you need the offense to step up, to not mess up, if you will, they're having trouble with those spots, and that's what reared its head against the Aggies.
Well, it's sustaining drives. It's like I wrote, I think, last week before I left, you know, Franks, and then you saw it again. I mean, a 79-yard run by Franks, right? Broken play, 79-yard run. I mean, that's longer than Tim Tebow ever ran for in the Swamp. So two amazing plays by Franks. Otherwise, it's been a lot of just really pedestrian play and inability to sustain drives. You can't count on a 79-yard run and a 63-yard pass to get things done on the offensive end, and they just don't seem to be able to, you know, have the balance to sustain the drives when they need to, and that was at the end of LSU, and then they didn't even give themselves a chance to even start a drive against Texas A&M at the end. But, you know, time was short, but 58 seconds with Eddie Pinheiro, you know, as a kicker, you would think that you would be able to give yourself at least a shot.
And since we are talking not just about Texas A&M game, but being that this is kind of, like I said, the halfway point, if you will, let's talk about Franks' development, what can be expected, unfortunately or or fair or not, the quarterback takes a lot more of the blame in some situations when an offense struggles. He certainly, you can point some fingers at him for something. Some things maybe out of his control, but his development so far, having everything placed on him, kind of the stutter step in the beginning of who was playing and who was not, what is his development, or where is his development as to where it should be now? And is that a sign to you, is that a sign of concern, or is this just part of that maturation process that you could expect from a guy young like him thrown into this situation?
I mean, it's been a tough situation, and I don't think it was aided by the benchings. The Kentucky game, it worked out for him. Didn't against Michigan. I mean, Zaire was totally ineffective. That's the last time he's played. So maybe you should have put him back in that game. But we did talk about that, I believe, the last podcast, that, you know, you keep yanking a guy like that, it can hurt his confidence. In terms of development, you have to expect a guy to at least, it's not going to always be linear, you know, progression. And there are going to be ups and downs and whatnot. But you do want to see some encouraging signs through six games, though it's a small sample size. I'm still not seeing a kid who can who's surveying the field very well, seeing his options. Not saying that's easy. It's very difficult. That's why not many people succeed playing that position. But that's a critical component, is being able to, you know, see the field and see more options than just your primary. And I think that's something that he really struggles with. And he's, you know, it's being exposed. And it's going to continue to be exposed because they're coming up against some pretty good defensive coordinators here in the next several games. And, you know, Kirby Smart, Muschamp, Florida State has a pretty good defense, even though the team's not that good. So it's going to be challenging for him, but I don't know what the answer is. I mean, does it just click? I mean, I don't know from my personal experience. I mean, I wasn't a quarterback. I just don't know enough. But does it just suddenly light go on? Because it's not on right now. I mean, that pass he threw at the end of the game the other day, I mean, he just threw it right at a guy. So it's been kind of disappointing, because you would have thought that, okay, big confidence boost coming out of Tennessee, didn't do anything against Kentucky, gets benched, and Del Rio steals the job. And then he came in against Vanderbilt and I guess was all right. But it's just, they're just, you know, he's averaging, I'm not even sure what it is, Brant, but if I had to guess, he's averaging probably fewer than 6 yards an attempt. So it's not like they're really getting anything out of that passing game right now.
And that was what I was going to say. I don't want to be completely woe is me on him, but 5 yards per pass against Texas A&M. I mean, he completed 17 passes, and it's only 129 yards. How much of that is the coaching staff protecting him? We've seen, you know, the positives of Franks. We've seen the athletic ability. You talked about the long touchdown pass. He's hit a couple times. He's gone deep and hit Cleveland. You have the long run against Texas A&M, so you're able to see he has some athleticism. He's able to make the plays. It's not obviously not on a consistent basis, but when I watch the game, and I watch all these games from my vantage point at the Orlando Sentinel headquarters, I don't see the offense trying, maybe because they don't want to test them or they don't have it, too many short passes. And if you aren't stretching the field on offense, then that allows the defense to be even tighter on other things. And when I look at these numbers and I see 17 for 26 and only 129 yards, I'm wondering, is he throwing down the field at all? And how much of this is he maybe being hamstrung by coordinators, by coaches, we've seen he has the arm, but I don't know if why they're not trying to utilize maybe more of his athletic gifts at this point.
It comes down to a lot more than just throwing a football. I mean, we all know that. I mean, it's a thinking position as much as the physical position, and that's why it is so difficult. It's hard to find those two components. And then if you throw in mobility, I mean, then you got like a guy like Aaron Rodgers, but we're talking a Hall of Famer. But I think some of it is coaching, that the lack of development for one, but the trust. And I'm actually was talking to you beforehand. I'm writing a story that's going to run Sunday, speaking with some of the SEC coaches on the teleconference yesterday about young quarterbacks and developing them and the challenges. And, you know, the consensus is each guy's obviously different in progression. It progress at different rates. But, you know, you do have to, the quarterback first has to win your trust as a coach before you're going to start really opening up the playbook for the guy, because you're not just going to throw the guy out there and expect things from him or ask things from him he can't do. And so it's kind of symbiotic. I mean, I don't know whether Franks is not showing things in practice, showing enough in practice for the coaches to really loosen the reins on him a little bit, or whether they're just kind of just afraid and they're trying to play it close to the vest and keep these games close. And I don't know that this team is talented enough. This isn't one of Steve Spurrier's offenses where he just blows someone off the field. So maybe that's your best strategy, is to try to keep this thing close, which you've been able to do, but then they're losing it at the end. But yes, you know, Felipe Franks, I mean, if there's a way to take advantage of his talent, the arm strength, which we've seen, by not putting him in positions for turnovers and things like that, that's the best case scenario. In his defense, I will say, though, Brant, I mean, he's without his best receiver,
right,
Tyree Cleveland, and the best receiver on the team hasn't even played this year, Antonio Callaway, and now Kadarius Toney, who they really haven't used a receiver lately, even though he was catching some screens earlier, has been hurt now too. So there's some pieces around him that are missing. And the tight ends have been kept in to help protect a bit because the offensive line's been getting whipped at times. But I don't even know that he could see the middle of the field anyway. I mean, we're wondering how much of the field he's even seen. So he might not be incorporating the tight ends anyway. But, you know, like I said, it's both, you know, the coaches and the quarterback are at fault here, I'm sure.
And that's a great segue into the coaching staff. And anytime you are a team with expectation and a passionate fan base, the coaches get a lot of attention. And Matt Mershell, our national writer, who was actually at the game last week in your stead while you're at your sister's wedding, congratulations to her. He and I talked about the Gators on our podcast, and I don't want to say that it was smoke and mirrors, because I want to give them credit, but you talk about doing just enough to get by or you know, play it tight to the vest. Florida was able to do that the last 2 years, and they were able to win SEC East division titles and win games. And you talked about McElwain's record, 9-1 in those one possession games until 2 weeks ago. That was a great record. But at some point, he wasn't brought to Florida. He wasn't brought to Gainesville to have a team that plays just well enough to win, maybe hopefully if you don't turn the ball over. And he was brought here under the guise of an offensive mind that was going to return the offense to its pre-Will Muschamp days, where it was exciting to watch, it was dynamic, it was those things. He didn't come here to play to have this kind of team. And sure, you can maybe take the first year or two and say, all right, you're getting your feet wet, the guys are getting used to it. But we're on year three now. The frustration that is mounting, I think, is real. I think it's allowed. I think fans should be wondering if this offense is ever going to come that he was supposed to bring. When does that seat really get hot, though? And it's one thing to be hot when the fans are upset, but when you look at Jim McElwain, his job there, we know the economics that come with coaches and that sort of thing. But that seat, though, when it starts getting hot from the outside, then the folks up above him start noticing that too. And when does his seat get hot, or is it already starting to warm up there?
Well, you know, one thing, just to your point about the close games and the different style the last couple of years, he inherited some very, very good defensive talent from Will Muschamp.
Absolutely.
And definitely parlayed that. And Johnny Townsend, who's been an incredible weapon, is also a Muschamp guy, though I'm sure Johnny, you know, Orlando kid, probably would end up here no matter what, but who was coaching. But the point is, he doesn't have that defensive talent quite that he's had. I mean, he doesn't have a Jared Davis. The linebackers don't have that kind of explosive guy. The secondary is very young. The defensive ends have been great. They just lost their, you know, one of their best ones. Their most productive defensive player probably this year has been Jordan Sherritt, who destroyed his hip, dislocated it potentially or something. Poor guy. That's awful. I mean, jeopardized his whole career. I mean, his college career is over because he's a redshirt senior. So, you know, that's one reason they were able to win the SEC East was because of those defenses, honestly. But in terms of the hot seat, it's funny. It's going to be when the seats in the swamp start, he stops filling those. Because that's one of the things with me, with Tennessee, what we were watching a couple few weeks ago, that place was empty by the end of one of those games. And it was like, you know, now Butch Jones has pretty much sealed his fate, it looks like. But even then, you're just like, God, you're the new AD. You don't want to, like, make this radical change right away. The guy's owed a lot of money. But, man, if you're not getting fans and nobody wants to write a check for anything, then that's when you got to get rid of guys. And the Gators are about to embark on a very ambitious facilities plan. In fact, there's a story running in the next day or two on the new facilities guy that I wrote before I left. And it's more than $100 million of projects, including a $60 million standalone facility, a football facility, that I guarantee is going to cost more than that. Because it looks like they're going to move baseball to a different part of the campus and give some more land, therefore, increasing the expense of this. So you're going to need people excited about this football program going forward, writing checks. You're going to, you know, paying high premium prices for tickets and all that. And people are very disgruntled with what the product is right now. So that's a tough one. I don't think that means Jim McElwain's on the hot seat right now. I mean, he has 5 years remaining on a contract after this season that has a $2.5 million buyout per year. Are you really willing to eat $12.5 million? Plus, you have assistant coaches, many of whom just signed two-year deals in March. So suddenly you have those that, you know, you're going to be eating tons of money. So I think you got to keep him and his staff, or at least most of it, in place and give him a chance next year and see where it goes. And he might still prove to be the answer. I think they had a good recruiting class this year, first off, right? The defensive backs have been very good, young guys. They've picked up some offensive pieces, Malik Davis, Kadarius Toney being the main two. This Kamari Gamble, the tight end, broke his foot or did something to his foot, but he showed a lot during the spring when we were able to see him. So I think that, you know, the recruiting seems to be trending a bit in the right direction. And 2018 class is eighth or something right now, and 19's like fifth. Now, those classes, they might not close the deal on those guys if the team continues to, you know, struggle. But I think there's some positive signs there, too. And I just don't see Jim McElwain, you know, losing his job. And you got extenuating circumstances, too, Brent. And yes, it's a cultural thing, potentially, when you have guys getting in trouble and maybe they don't feel like the hammer's going to fall on them. I mean, how can Antonio Callaway keep getting in, like, little incidents all the time? I mean, his only real, like, criminal charge on his record is a misdemeanor citation for marijuana possession. Big deal, right?
Right.
I mean, he's more notorious than, like, nefarious, I think is the way somebody put it to me the other day. But he is a guy, I mean, where's the fear? Aren't you scared of getting in trouble? I mean, when I went to school, I mean, I was afraid you'd get in trouble with the principal or whatever. I mean, the coach should, like, have these guys a little nervous that they need to fall in line and behave. So the suspensions I don't completely absolve him of them. But, you know, the injuries, I mean, that's not his fault. So you look at it if you're Scott Strickland, the AD, and you're like, I mean, geez, the guy's playing with a depleted roster, a young quarterback, et cetera, et cetera. But Do you, as an AD, talk to McElwain and say, look, man, you got to make some changes in this offensive staff? Do you interject yourself to that level? That'll be interesting to see. But I mean,
that is how this works, usually.
Yeah, you would think.
The first step before you get rid of the head coach is, all right, you say, okay, let's try this with new coordinators. And I know that McElwain's loyal to his guys, but this is how it works in college football. When a guy has a long contract.
Or even pro football, they claim staffs.
Right, the staff goes first, and if the next staff doesn't fix it, then they can put it on the head coach job. So if I was a betting person, which I'm not, but this is how it works in football. You'll see if the team continues along in track it's on right now, where there's nothing that shows that it won't, you will see changes on the staff first before you would see changes at the top. And then if next year when you have guys back and you have more recruits in, and then if it still isn't getting better, then you'll start seeing that maybe the whole thing needs to be scrapped. But you'll see coordinators go, you'll see staff changes go before you'll see McElwain go.
Yeah, can you believe that? And I know I was just rambling there, kind of looking for like a purpose, but because it's a complicated issue. It's hard to really succinctly get to what should happen. I'm not going to say that he's not the guy yet. I'm just not prepared to do that yet. I mean, there are a lot of extenuating circumstances. I mean, the data is building against him for sure. And there's no doubt. I mean, but I think I don't want to get knee-jerk here and, oh, my God, he's not the guy. I had a pretty strong feeling by this point that Muschamp wasn't the guy. And then Georgia Southern happened, and that was in November. So let's see how this November plays out. And maybe by season's end, I'll be like, yeah, maybe McElwain isn't the guy. But I do think that he's going to get one more year to prove it. But you know what's crazy? Just think if they do get rid of Jim McElwain after next year, that'll be $10 million buyout right there. And then maybe some other with a coach here or there, like Chris Rumpf, who's on a three-year deal now. But then you would have gotten rid of Muschamp at 6.3 million in 2014, and then in 2018 you're getting rid of McElwain for $10 million. It's like, my God, how can you? It's just like these buyouts have gotten to be ridiculous. First off, but just how can you keep screwing up like this?
And I think that's probably the bigger thing is that's the frustrating point. Fans know what buyouts are like, but you keep messing up, assuming that it doesn't work out. You keep messing up with the head coach. And I know here in Orlando, you see what Scott Frost has been able to do with UCF in 2 years. Different conference, different level, whatever you want to say on that. But just the ability of him to come in and a year and a half later have an entire new scheme and attitude and everything. So you can see that it can be done. So I can understand the frustration in fans. I'm with you on it. I'm not convinced yet that McElwain isn't the right guy, and he's shown that he can win games and work with what he has. I want to see how that develops, but I do expect to see him with some new coaching staff next year. And on our next podcast, we'll look ahead to the Georgia game. It's been enough woe already before we start looking ahead to that one. But we did want to talk about some positive things about the team, and you brought Johnny Townsend up, and I know it's almost... It's not to be sarcastic to point out that the punter is one of your best players, but he is, and he's certainly a weapon. But something that you noted that we talked about before the podcast is, and you see this in teams that are struggling, you see that they don't, the effort stops being there, and they stop playing hard. You can't see that with this team. This is a team that seemingly, on the outside at least, believes in their coach and their staff and their program. And there's not a lacking of effort in these games. And I think that is significant because now, as you said, if they struggle down the stretch, who knows what happens with that. But as of through this point, you're seeing a team that plays hard, that maybe not always get the result they want. And obviously there may be some deficiencies some places, but they seemingly are still bought in on this and they're giving it their all. And that's a positive sign, I think, at this point.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, I was saying beforehand, the curious thing's going to be if that doesn't happen coming down the stretch. Now, that's a real red flag. I don't expect that, to be honest, but Georgia has been dismantling teams, and let's say, you know, it gets ugly early and there's really no sign of hope, and then suddenly you got a lot of bad body language and maybe some guys giving up, like you saw against Michigan in the Citrus Bowl that year, which was really a bad look for the Gators, and McElwain was furious. So if his team were to come out and lay down on him, that would be a bad sign. I'm not expecting that. I mean, this is a fierce rivalry. Then you're on the road at Missouri. You know, that's hostile environment. I don't think Missouri's probably going to win that game, though they are capable on offense. The tough one's going to be, Brant, and we've talked about this, at South Carolina. I've called this one the Wrath of Boom, because I tell you, Muschamp is going to be seeing, you know, fire in that game and a real opportunity. Muschamp is really positioned right now. They're 5-2, man, and they have Wofford coming up. That's 6-2. I think they have one other game they should win. I forget which one it is. And then Clemson's on the schedule in Georgia. That's surely two losses. But this Gator game, they win that game, they could be 8-4. Can you imagine if the Gators end this season 5-6, 6-5 maybe, and Muschamp's up in Columbia in his second year, not his third like McElwain, with an 8-4 team? Man.
8-4 team going to a good bowl, and Florida comes in 5-6, and the reason they're 5-6 is because of South Carolina. Yeah, that's a storyline, and I think you're right. I think if you're the Gators, you know Georgia is going to be a tough game, and even if you're your fans and players, you know that you don't expect that you won a W in that game, but you know how tough they are. You would expect the win at Missouri, maybe. That South Carolina game, that looms as a very important game, and it's odd to say this when just 2 weeks ago we were talking about them being unbeaten in the SEC and playing for a third consecutive SEC East title, but that South Carolina game now looms as a big game on so many levels, and South Carolina is improved quickly, and you know they can score points. They did it against Arkansas. They can also play defense. They did that against Tennessee. So this is a team that, and you know they're going to want to beat Florida for Boom, as you said. And I think that game, as we're looking ahead, I think that really looms large on this schedule, probably more than any of the other ones before the season finale, just because I think that's the one that can go either way, and that could say a lot about what this team is going forward from what happens in that game.
Oh, I know, man. That's going to be a brutal one if they lose that game. I wasn't here, as we said at the beginning, for the Texas A&M game. I heard that Coach McElwain was pretty terse, and he can get that way. Understandably, I get it. I mean, look, I'm a competitor. I lost golf on Sunday to my cousin and best friend, and I was winning through like 15 holes and blew it. And I wasn't happy. I was replaying that round in my mind when I woke up the next day a little bit. But so I get being competitive, and this is big-time competition, right? I mean, you're out there. You know you're going to get hammered. You know, I mean, you're getting paid a ton of money. You know what the expectations are. And he's a big boy. He gets it. But then he gets in that media room, and you wonder sometimes if he truly does, because he does get very, he doesn't like being challenged, and fans are all over us, you know, ask tougher questions and all this. Well, he doesn't go there, and it's hard to challenge the guy, someone who isn't going to let you challenge him. So it's just going to get tougher and tougher to cover this program too as things go. But I tell you, there will be no tougher post-game press conference in this time covering the Gators so far under McElwain if they lose at South Carolina, man. That will be rough.
and we'll leave it at that. We don't want to go too far ahead. Edgar, enjoy your Saturday off, and we'll talk next week. We'll get together for another podcast, and we'll look ahead to Georgia at that time and give that game its proper lead-in. But I did want to just kind of take this podcast to kind of catch up to the season where we are. Enjoy your Saturday and get back into the groove there, and work on your golf game if you have a chance, so you don't blow it again next time you're out there. And And we will be talking to you all again next week. In the meantime, please subscribe, tell a friend, and keep following all the Florida Gator coverage at OrlandoSentinel.com.
Thank you for listening to Swamp Things Talk, your Florida Gators podcast. For more Gators coverage, visit OrlandoSentinel.com. Subscribe to this podcast, share it on social media, and review it on iTunes. We'll see you next time.